Good afternoon. I'm going to call to order the Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. I'm going to do the bill that's going to take less time first. I'm going to do the House Bill 3432, so I'm going to open a public hearing on that bill. And Representative?
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3432 permits county surveyors to decide whether to forward noncompliant survey maps prepared by professional land surveyors that have failed to correct them within 30 days to the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying for disciplinary action. There's no fiscal and no revenue impact statement. It was unanimous out of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources and unanimous off of the consent calendar on the House floor, 58-2 excused.
Chair Riley, Committee, David Brocksmith, State Representative, House District 1. This is a good bill that just provides one change and one word, shall to may, and it's a good bill. It should pass, and ask for your vote in favor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bavatt, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties, here today representing the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. This is a good housekeeping bill that basically, as the representative mentioned, changes one word in one statute. It all relates to when county surveyors have to file a report with the state that a survey that needs fixing hasn't been fixed. The current statute says they have to do it on day 30. That might have worked 20 years ago, but in modern land use and all kinds of other issues, county surveyors are often working with surveyors for a lot longer than 30 days. So this bill literally just does change one word in one statute to give county surveyors the discretion about when they turn in a defective survey. Good bill should pass.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. We probably all remember that old game show, Name That Tune, where the contestants would compete against one another on how quickly they could name a song and versus a number of notes. And Mr. Bovet and I have been wagering back and forth on how quickly we could testify on today's bill. I won at 12 seconds. And so with my time expired, I appreciate you supporting the bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you very much. That's all that I have signed up for this. Anybody else want to speak on this bill? I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3432.
Chair Riley, I move House Bill 3432 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Moore moves House Bill 3432 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? It goes to the floor, and
I'll be happy to carry it.
Senator Moore will carry. Thank you. All right. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2190.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2190. Came out of the House Business and Labor Committee on a unanimous vote and off the House floor on a divided vote, 39-16, with 5 excused. This measure allows cities and counties to authorize social games only if they are operated and controlled by charitable, fraternal, or religious organizations.
Okay, I like to call the folks who've come a long way first, so I'm going to call up John Shark, Angela Jordison, Paul Ruaj, and Pam Kirk. And I'm sorry, I apologize for the name pronunciation, but you can correct me when you introduce yourselves.
My name is Paul Runge, and I'm the owner of the Bend Poker Room in Bend, Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to be heard on this issue. Obviously, the Bend Poker Room, well, maybe not obviously, but the Bend Poker Room is one of the rooms that would be closed if House Bill 2190 were to pass. I've sent each of you an email, and I don't think it'd be valuable for me to rehash the information I sent you in the email. What I'd like to do is address some of the issues that were brought up at the House committee meeting for the Business and Labor Committee. Both what I heard at that meeting when I attended that meeting, and also what I found in the staff measure summary on the website. So it should only take me a minute or two, and I'd like to cover those. There was a lot of discussion at the House committee meeting regarding social game rooms in Oregon, and that they did not have the same regulation and oversight that the casino gaming industry has. But we, of course, have a fundamentally different business model than casinos do. Casinos charge a game with a house advantage. And in poker, this occurs by charging what's called a rake, which is a fund. Essentially, you take a few dollars out of the pot at the end of every hand. What that would mean is if we gave every person here $100 and we send them in the casino to play poker, in short, relatively short order, the casino would have all of the money that would come from that game. What we do at the Bend Poker Room is we charge people a door fee, either $5 or $8, depending on what they're going to play. And player money stays 100% in the game and is returned to the players. So to compare us to casinos is essentially comparing apples to oranges. We're not the same thing. We don't operate in the same way. Also, there's been talk that it occurred on the House floor. There was discussion about nefarious activities that occur in card rooms. Prostitution and money laundering have been mentioned. Let me just say that does not occur at the Bend Poker Room. If we ask the players who are here from the Bend Poker Room, they're going to chuckle just like what they heard. I mean, the Bend Poker Room is a social club that brings a variety of people together to play cards. There are none of these things that occur at our location. I can tell you that as a fact. Some of the issues that were mentioned in the staff measure summary, do poker rooms have surveillance systems? Yes. Do poker rooms do their due diligence in hiring employees? I can tell you as a small business owner, I absolutely. At this point, we have one employee besides my wife and I. Of course, we do our due diligence to hire the best people possible. We got our chips all in the middle on this baby, and we're going to do it the best we can. There's been issues with dealers, and that was discussed in the House committee. At the Bend Poker Room, all of the games are player dealt. We do not have dealers. The way we do it is somebody deals for an hour, and then we high card, and somebody else takes their turn as the dealer. If this issue 2190 were to pass because of that dealer issue, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, we don't have anything to do with that issue. Is poker playing the dominant use of the premises? When we opened, we offered other games right away. I understood this was to be in accordance with the gaming regulation. We offer ping pong, foosball, chess. And I have to tell you, we now offer those games because players enjoy them. They do those in addition to poker is our predominant activity for sure. But people do those other games as well. You'd be surprised how many people enjoy ping pong. It's quite competitive. All of these things occur at the Bend Poker Room. It was brought up in the other committee about competition with nonprofit poker rooms. I am unaware of any nonprofit poker room to be competing with, not only in Central Oregon, but anywhere in the state. I'm not aware if there is a nonprofit poker room. In the last year, we have done 5 fundraising tournaments for various local groups. We do this essentially a community outreach. We have the facility, we have the expertise. I used to work for the YMCA. I have experience in fundraising. We do these as a way to participate and give back to the community. We'd be happy to do more of them. I think we're fulfilling that function very well. The issue of more regulation for card rooms was brought up. We welcome any improvements to the social gaming ordinance that would clear up the issues that have occurred that brought us here to this point at this time. And the last thing was the entertainment and tourism value of card rooms. Poker's a beautiful game. It brings together all ages, all religions, all income levels, all ethnicities, all genders. These people play games, they have fun, they make friends. Occasionally you win some money. We have accomplished. And let me say one thing about poker. The worst player in the room gets to win occasionally. That's one of the beauties of poker, right? Everybody, because of the luck element in addition to the skill element, gets a chance to win. A poker room is a great place to be. It's really a truly American place to be that brings all people together. I think the social gaming ordinance that currently existed provided two things. It provided a business opportunity for somebody with some entrepreneurial spirit. In that regard, it has succeeded. We're making a modest income. We're having a great time. It's very challenging. We're enjoying it. That's going fantastically. And second, it provided an opportunity for people who enjoy poker to get together and play. And in that regard, the social gaming ordinance has succeeded. I'm not sure why it needs to be changed. I'm asking you to consider voting no on 2190. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. I want to ask the folks who are here. We do have a lot of people, and keep it short, please.
There you go.
And if you haven't, if someone has already made the point that you want to make, please just say so and move on. So if you would go ahead.
Thank you. I want to thank you guys for your service to the state, and thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Angela Jordison. I live in Central Oregon, and a lot of this social gaming started with me. I was a stockbroker. I sold my clients and opened a sports bar in Redmond, Oregon, with the first legal licensed poker room in the state. This was in 2002. My city did not know what to do with me. We called in the Gaming Enforcement Commission from the state. They also did not know really anything about social gaming. So we learned together. And I worked with my city attorney, the chief of police, and the state gaming, and we wrote a very specific ordinance for the city of Redmond that outlined everything in line with the state statute for social gaming. We ran successfully until 2007 when I sold that business. Since then, I've played poker all over the state and all over the country. I've been in most social gaming rooms in the state of Oregon. I would urge you to vote no on this bill because I feel that it's too broad. Even though the card rooms are getting all the attention about social gaming, that's not all that social gaming is about. If this bill passes, it makes the game up on Mount Hood on a Thursday night where some locals come together and play in the local restaurant. It makes that game illegal. It makes the game at the Bend Country Club where eight guys come together once a week on Tuesdays and play together, who have played together for 20 years. It makes that game illegal. It makes the free poker leagues around the city of Portland, where people come together just for the joy of the game and play for points, it makes that game illegal. So it's not just these poker rooms that are getting all the attention. It affects all these small games and all these small communities all over the state. And those games are living up to the letter of the law of the social gaming intent. It's a game amongst players. They're there to have a good time in a public, safe environment. And that is my main issue with the bill. I believe it should be left up to the cities to govern these. Our city in Redmond and the city of Bend are regulating these games with zero complaints. We're not having any issues whatsoever, and our city is able to handle it. So to pass a broad state bill seems too far. And, you know, poker is a game where women are a minority. I make up less than 6% of the poker playing population. It's important for me to have a safe environment to play in. And that's what these rooms provide for me. And they're in my local communities, around by local people. You know, poker players are not these seedy people slithering around at night. I am the face of poker. These guys are the face of poker, and people in this room are the face of poker. We're doctors, we're lawyers, we're attorneys, we're retirees, we're veterans, we're all these things. We are as diverse as the communities we play in. And these rooms are an essential part for us to come together, play in a safe, managed environment for the game that we love. So, I mean, in closing, I would just urge you to please vote no. This bill is way too broad and affects way too many things.
Hi, I'm Pam Kirk, and I'm what she's been talking about. I'm one of the players, and I have a real estate office. I have sold real estate for, I'm retired now. I'm too old to sell, but I've sold for a lot of years, and I've been playing poker for a lot of years, and it's an outlet for me. It's an outlet for other people that are I have all kinds of rules that you go by with poker as long as with real estate, and it's actually a very, very fun thing to do. And thank you.
Thank you. That was perfect. So hang on just a second. Any questions for this panel?
You can ask me. Oh, I'm sorry.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You mentioned a poker club, and I'm wondering, how does one belong? Is there dues or?
No. Just speaking for ourselves, we charge you a door fee each time that you come. So depending on the game, essentially, or the activity, we do have people who come and play just ping pong, and that's what they pay to play. So you pay a modest door fee, either $5 or $8 in our case, and then we encourage you to buy drinks and snacks while you're there.
Senator Brzezinski.
And in the Bend poker room, do you have employees?
We have, my wife and I are the owners, and we have one employee. That's where we're at now, hoping to have another one soon if we continue to grow.
He just checks people in. He is not a dealer or.
Yep. That's right. Next question. What participation of the individuals that you have there helping facilitate the games?
We help facilitate the game. So there's anywhere from one of us on a slow night to three of us on Friday nights. That's our biggest night. All three of us are there on Friday nights. We help facilitate the game, and then because players deal in the game, we're there just to facilitate the games and serve you drinks and snacks. Please buy those when you attend. On a slow night, we might have 20 people in the tournament and maybe another 10 people that play cash games. And on a Friday night, we might have 80 to 100 players who attend on a Friday night.
Did you want to answer that question as well?
Well,
you had your hand up.
Oh, no, that's all right. I just was going to say that I'm one of the people he was talking about. I'm one of the customers.
Okay.
And I feel very safe there.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm going to call up Westwood, Steve Boyd, and Josh Soldati.
Chairman Riley, members of the committee, thank you for hearing me. My name is Josh Soldati. I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm here to ask you to oppose House Bill 2190. I moved to Oregon 10 years ago, and making new friends when you move to a new location can be very difficult. Luckily, I found a social gaming club just a few miles from my home, and I started playing there once or twice a week. Through the experience, I met new friends, musicians, doctors, activists, etc., and the future best man at my wedding. These are friends I never would have met otherwise. The clubs I play at charge a nominal door fee, typically $15. When I buy into a tournament, it usually costs me $20 to $50, and all the proceeds are split among the players. The house doesn't take any percentage of that, as has been stated before. This is in stark contrast to the casinos, as was mentioned, which charge a rake or a percentage fee off of every pot or from every tournament. These clubs provide a social outlet for gaming enthusiasts that aren't available anywhere else, and actually Oregon is rare in what it offers to the poker community. If you go to most other states, they don't offer similar safe, controlled venues for players who are like-minded to come together and share the experience. So I would hope you will oppose House Bill 2190. Thank you.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, I am also opposed to House Bill 2190.
Your name, please.
Steve Boyd from Albany, Oregon. I don't want to reiterate a lot of things that I can almost identically say what he did. I mean, I was separated from my wife. I was looking for some outlet, some way that I could spend some time, get some socialization and so forth. I met three of my best friends in the world in playing poker, and I wouldn't have met them, and I wouldn't have had the opportunity. I have another example that I'd like to talk about. There's an older couple that comes to our club in their mid to early 80s, comes four to five times a week, comes down from Salem to Albany just so they can be socializing and having fun with their friends. She has leukemia. She takes chemo. She still makes it down there, and she's one of the top players. And so there's outlets for these clubs that provide a lot of things for people to do other than sit home and watch TV. And I think it's important to know that what he was talking about earlier about this is a skill game. It's a, you know, there's some element of chance involved in it, but it's not a casino game. It does not have a built-in house advantage. It's certainly not the kind of thing that where somebody is getting rich off of. People don't come to we don't come to play and make money. You know, if we did, we'd be failing. Trust me. It's fun. It's what we do for fun. It's what we do for our activity. I also find it a little bit offensive that the state will go ahead and rubber stamp the you know, the lottery that robs people of their livelihoods in some cases, but they want to heavy-handedly eliminate poker rooms that don't harm anybody. There's no problem, so I don't see why there's a need to be so heavy-handed. If there's some issues, then we need to look at trying to legislate those and get the law so that it's everybody's going by the law. But we can do that. We don't need to just carte blanche make them illegal. And what you do when you do that is you have things like you had in the 20s when they had prohibition. You'll drive it underground. There'll be unsafe situations. There'll be police called to places where there's games, where there's going to be fights and problems. And that's what we don't want. That'll create exactly the environment that they don't want.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Riley, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity today. My name is Westwood. I'm director of Voice of Problem Gambling Recovery. And we are a 501c3 based here in Oregon, in Portland. And our work is to advocate and educate and promote recovery around compulsive and problem gambling. As our numbers continue to grow in Oregon, which now we exceed over 80,000 of our citizens that deal with on a daily basis their compulsive gambling and the devastation to their families, we're pleased to submit two documents today, both of these, one from Dr. Jeff Murata and one from Michael Savage. These, as well as myself, all three of us are Oregon citizens. I was just born in Dallas, right down the street here. So these two folks are both known experts nationally in the field, and with their documents and testimony, we're offering you some alternatives, some options, and things for consideration. We feel that now is the best time for legislation to come forward and provide a rule set for local authorities to at least have something to build responsible regulation around. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. I've just been, well, I think we've all been inundated with some stuff from both sides, and so I may not say this correctly, but I'm not a poker player, so I may not be phrasing this right, but you were mentioning in your testimony that you don't take a, or where you play doesn't take a rake like casinos would, and that all the money in the pot, is that right?
Goes to
shared among players. Does that count for rebuys?
All of it. All of it.
Everything.
Every penny. Every club I've played in Oregon, I'm just a player, by the way, and every club I play in Oregon, they all operate on the same rules, guidelines.
And I'm just a player as well, and it's the same thing. It's, you know, I guess that's part of the problem is that education's our biggest issue because most of the people here probably haven't spent much time in a card room, and so there's some stigmas and some stereotypes that come forward that really aren't valid today. A lot of the people that I play with have advanced degrees. They're business people. They're, you know, it's a very challenging game. It's probably I was a very successful young chess player. It's much more challenging than chess. I enjoy the cerebral part of the game much more than I'm not going to get rich playing this game probably, but I certainly enjoy the challenge of trying to get better at it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
I'm just going to go down the list. So, Brian Sarahi.
Sarchi.
Yep. Tim Martinez. Steve Cornacci. I'll let you correct me when you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tim Martinez here on behalf of Sarchi Consulting. My client down here, Brian Sarchi. I took your message to heart, so I'm just introducing myself. I'm going to turn it over to Brian for comment, and then we have a member from lawyer from Eugene who can talk a little bit more about the issue as well.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, appreciate you giving me this opportunity. A lot of the stuff has already been covered, so I just want to hit on a couple key points. My name is Brian Sarchi. I am opposed to House Bill 2190. I've owned and operated social gaming for the last 8 years. I'm currently the owner of the Portland Meadows location. And just to hit on a couple of the things that everyone has said, but a little bit different. My income comes from food and beverage and memberships. We don't take money from the pots like was just asked by Senator Thatcher. All that money goes right back to the players. You know, we do not take any of that. And when we hear stuff, people that aren't educated about that, that make that, you know, reference that we do that, it is frustrating when you do run a legitimate game. And players that come play, they would know if we took money. They're not stupid. They watch the boards. When your reputation goes, the players go. And that's an integrity that I would keep as an owner. That's huge. That's my biggest thing. The only people that have issues with Oregon social gaming is Washington Poker Rooms. They're the people that are bringing this up and have had issues with this over the years. And they're the ones that do what we talked about, take money out of prize pools. Completely different. We want to keep these games above board. We don't have issues in our clubs. We don't call the police. We don't do any of that stuff. We keep a nice above board business running. And lastly, we are in compliance with the city of Portland. We have a social gaming permit that is renewed yearly. So we don't just run our own thing and make our own rules. They make the rules for us and we follow them. I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you very much.
Chair Riley, Floyd, members of the committee. I'm Steve Cornacchia. I've been a lawyer in Lane County for nearly 40 years, and I'm going to read my comments to get it, make it go faster here. And served 12 years as a Lane County commissioner with 5 years as its chair, during which time I also served as president of the Association of Oregon Counties. My dad, Pete, a career journalist with the Eugene Register Guard, taught me to play poker as a boy. I played poker in Eugene in one setting or another since I returned home from the Vietnam War, in which I served as a Green Beret. That makes me a brother of your colleague, Senator Boquist, and we associate together as members of the Special Forces Association of America. I'm the secretary of the local chapter. I provide my resume to you only to establish my credibility. I am a primary face of poker in Eugene. And I'm about as close to being an expert witness on poker play in Eugene as you're going to find. About 10 years ago, partly due to my growing weary of spending an hour and a half on the freeway driving to an Indian casino to play poker, and in awareness of the authority that the legislature had granted cities and counties back then, I approached the city manager of Eugene with an offer to help the city modify and improve upon its social gaming ordinance that had been in place for decades, but really was not compatible with Hold'em poker. Sorry, Senator Thatcher, but that's a type of poker game. Or tournament play. My credibility and social stature within the city of Eugene and Lane County led the city manager, police chief, and legal counsel to meet with me several times, after which we created together, and the city manager signed off on a new social gaming ordinance for Eugene. We've been playing poker in Eugene businesses and clubs pursuant to that ordinance since then. And most players in Eugene know of my support for poker in the city and my oft-stated expectations that the poker games and tournaments that will be run efficiently and, most importantly, fairly.
pursuant to that ordinance. In the 10 years of play in Eugene since then, there has not been a single call for law enforcement at any of the Eugene businesses featuring poker games and poker tournaments. I recently made those statements to another of your colleagues, Representative Lively. John, being the conscientious legislator that he is, decided to check out my assertions by contacting the city, wherein he found confirmation of those very assertions. I play in those games, in those tournaments. The games I attend are often held during day hours, and more often not are attended by retired veterans like me. Evening tournaments number in scores of players, many of them older husbands and wives. Currently, I play with physicians, lawyers, CPAs, teachers, law enforcement officers, realtors, business owners, and a whole lot of everyday Joes and Josephines. Modern-day poker is legitimate, and the players are legitimate, far from the ancient cliches of pimps, prostitutes, druggies, and the mafia, Russian or otherwise. I'm not a pimp. I'm not a drug dealer or a member of a nefarious gang. And I have yet to meet any of those folks in any of the games that I've played in. The language of this legislation does one thing. It removes authority of the cities and the counties to allow the play of poker in businesses and places of public accommodation, allowing play only through established charitable organizations or Indian casinos. There are no such organizations in Oregon involved with poker. What the legislation really does is force all Oregonians to play poker in Indian casinos and eliminate scores of jobs most often held by young folks, especially students. In other words, this legislation does not benefit any Oregonians, only harms many of them while benefiting Indian casinos only. This is not an industry in bad need of regulation. This is not a problem looking for a solution. And this is not a setting conducive to criminals and others that fit the ancient cliche regarding poker players. It's folks like me and my neighbors and your neighbors, all of whom are asking you not to choose Indian casinos over Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Senator Brzezinski. Now,
Brian, I just have to follow up on your statement because I've been given a packet, and within the packet is a letter from the City of Portland dated December 12th of 2016.
Yep.
Stating that your facility was in fact in violation apparently of a door fee and illegal gambling. It says that the suspension was going to stay in effect until January 5th of this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming based on your statement you've corrected those
issues. Yes, we have. We have met with the city and we have corrected all those issues and have an agreement with them currently.
All right. So at one point it says here's door fee because it was not collected from everyone entering into the we've heard from the person from Bennett's, apparently they do, whoever comes in, they're going to pay some fee for based on what activity?
Yeah, so basically we don't make the money off the poker game, so anybody that comes into our club needs to pay a cover fee if there's one. We couldn't single out the poker players and say, you guys pay the cover fee, you guys come in for free. In this instance, we mismanaged a customer that came in and did not collect a door fee from that person, and it happened to be a city official. And that was for us to correct. So currently we are going to a marking system where we'll have a wristband or a stamp so that when they come in, we know that they've paid that cover fee. That way we are not just singling out a poker player and saying that we're making money from the game. We make money from everybody that comes in the room. It's not just strictly poker players. So we don't just single them out. And that has been corrected with the city, and we have an agreement signed with them saying that we will move forward with the marking system.
The last question I have, Brian, is it says illegal gambling because the games were not restricted to players only, and it says dealers must be players, and therefore the games do not qualify as social games.
Absolutely.
And so the issue there was someone was...
Yeah, the issue there that has been corrected also is social gaming is a game amongst the players. We currently now need to have everybody that plays in a game, they have to play. They cannot just come in, sit down, and deal cards. They must be a player in that tournament or game. So unlike a casino where you would not have a casino employee play in a game or let alone have anyone else touch the cards, this would be where you come in. If you're going to play, you're going to play in the tournament. You can't just strictly deal. And that has also been corrected.
So just to follow up, the dealer in this particular case wasn't someone that was employed or volunteering under your purview. They just came in and said, I'd like to deal.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Dewey, Jim Amon, Bob Atkinson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Atkinson, and like the other people who've spoken, I am speaking in opposition to those portions of the bill that would close the Oregon poker rooms. To introduce myself, I worked for almost 10 years in the provision of civil legal services to poor people, the last five of those as the executive director of the Marion Polk Legal Aid Service here in Salem. I also spent 25 years as an assistant attorney general in the appellate division of the Oregon Department of Justice. The last several of those years, I had the responsibility to oversee the state's practice in the Oregon Supreme Court, and I was also given the distinct honor of defending Oregon's first-in-the-nation Death with Dignity Act in the United States Supreme Court. And I mention these things only to make it clear that I am not a professional poker player or a professional gambler of any kind. I'm a recreational player like most of the folks that I play with at Brian's Club. As you know, the original Gaming Act, or the original Social Gaming Act from the 1970s, if you've seen the Attorney General's opinion, 2010 number one, the primary issue driving those legislatures was to keep big-time gambling out of Oregon. And I can assure you that what's going on in the poker clubs in Portland, the ones I've played in, is not big-time gambling. This is not the World Poker Tour. This is not the World Series of Poker. You don't pay thousands of dollars to enter tournaments. You can't win millions of dollars in these tournaments. These are small tournaments played by recreational players. And of course, the poker rooms do provide income for not only for the owners, but for the tournament managers, for some dealers in some cases, for wait staff, for cooks, for bartenders, and cleanup crews. And I guess what I would respectfully ask you to ask yourselves is the following question, and that is, with the exception of those who are currently profiting from poker, most of whom are in Washington State, who is being hurt by the poker rooms that this bill would close? And I respectfully submit that the answer is no one. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Chair Riley and fellow senators, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Jim Eamon, and I've been living in Portland, Oregon for 15 years. I'm just a citizen of Oregon. I work for OHSU in Oregon in medical research, and shortly after moving here is just exactly when the big boom in the popularity of poker occurred, about 2003, when an unknown person won the World Series of Poker, and suddenly everyone was interested in poker. And that's when I started playing. And I have to say that it's just, what I do is go to these rooms to meet with people and have fun playing cards. I have no expectation of winning money. I hopefully don't plan on losing a significant amount of money, but it's kind of hard to because I'm only entering tournaments that cost me $20 to $25 each, and I pay a $5 or $10 fee to enter these poker rooms. But I want to say that I hope that I believe that the principal purpose of this legislative body is to make things better for Oregon and Oregonians. And I believe that House Bill 2190 does not make things better for Oregon or Oregonians. First of all, if Bill 2190 were to pass, hundreds of taxpaying Oregon citizens would lose their jobs. And I think it's fairly obvious to say that that point, at least, is not good for Oregon. Secondly, since the businesses would be closing, that would actually result in a decrease of tax revenue for the state of Oregon. Now, some people like to say that that money is behind all politics, that money is the root cause of everything that happens in politics. I hope that's not the case, but in case that money is a major issue in this bill, I'd like to say that once again, this would be to the detriment of Oregon and Oregonians because it would result in a decrease of tax revenue. And another purpose of this legislative body, I believe, is to establish law and order. And once again, on this point, I believe that this bill would not serve the purpose of establishing law and order. When I moved to Portland, since there were, at that point there were no social poker clubs playing for live stakes in Portland, and so on reading newspaper articles and following issues in the news, I would occasionally read about that there was basically an underground community developed to play poker. And these were people who were organizing themselves through social media, and they would get together in the back of warehouses at midnight, and they'd play poker. And these are completely unregulated situations where perhaps things that weren't savory could possibly happen. So what I enjoy now is a safe, secure place, a comfortable place where I can play cards with my fellow citizens without having, the problems that might come in if they were operating in secret. And so I don't see what the advantage to Oregon would be to basically, if these social gaming rooms were closed down, I think it'd be pretty naive to think that the underground community would not reestablish itself. And I'm pretty sure that the local law enforcement people up in Portland would not be pleased to have to go around chasing and finding these illegal situations and trying to deal with them at that point. You know, as I've listened to testimony concerning this bill, you know, from those who are opposed, who are support this bill, it seems that the main point that they have is that they say that current legislation is vague, and that may well be. I don't think any of us want Oregon law to be vague. But there are other ways to deal with the vagueness of the situation rather than throwing hundreds of Oregonians out of work, rather than decreasing state tax revenue, and rather than creating an unsafe, basically paving the way for an unsafe situation of driving this activity underground. So, you know, recently it's been pretty obvious that a lot of Americans are very upset with how things work in Washington, D.C. And I think a big reason for that is that they think that what legislators there spend most of the time working on and supporting are things that don't really benefit the average citizen. So today in Oregon, I would ask you to do what is best for Oregon, what benefits Oregon, and what benefits Oregonians, and oppose House Bill 2190. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike. Mr. Chair, members, Mike Dewey representing Portland Meadows Racetrack. Let me give you a little background about Portland Meadows. It's owned by the Stronach Group, and they also own racetracks Santa Anita, Gulfstream, Pemlico, where the Preakness, the second leg, is run, Golden Gate. They also have training, breeding, and after care horse farms in the United States, I believe four, primarily in the Midwest. Portland Meadows is, I think most of you know, struggles a bit. If you take Pemlico and Santa Anita, they are the A-tracks in the United States. Portland Meadows is in the C, D category, unfortunately. We want to continue to keep this facility open. Patrons come to Portland Meadows, obviously, to wager on live horse race meets, simulcasting where you can watch a race and via the internet make a wager on those races throughout the United States at Portland Meadows. And we also have a video lottery terminals, a carve-out of 10. Most facilities have 6. I was somewhat surprised, and the general manager of Portland Meadows could not be here when he said we are considering opening up a poker facility. So that opened up last June. We have a large facility, so there was an opportunity to renovate a certain area to make it very nice. And about $100,000 was spent on that activity. And he has said that he was pleasantly surprised by how many people wanted to come to Portland Meadows and play poker, and how many people, and it helped the food and beverage side immensely. And it was another line of opportunity for the business. We have a large parking lot. We are off of I-5. Close to Washington. I may say, and I think you know this, there are interests in Washington that would benefit by closing the facilities in the Portland area
and across Oregon. And that doesn't make me really happy if, you know, if that would be the case. We have great security. We have good food. People want to come to our facility. Portland Meadows also benefits immensely the county fair horse meets. Without Portland Meadows, I don't think you would see the county fairs have their races because there wouldn't be the horses. I'm not saying we're going to go away by any means. We are licensed by the Racing Commission. We are audited financially by the Racing Commission. We're licensed by the Lottery Commission. You did hear that there were, I think, two violations. I would say they were minor. Nonetheless, they were violations. And the general manager wanted to make it very clear to the folks that were running the facility that we want to make sure we are on board with the rules and regulations from the city. And so a negotiation took place, and we're going to be in compliance with all those rules. So we're in opposition to this particular bill. It would not help Portland Meadows by any means. We're a little bit different because people come to our facility to gamble. That's what they come to do. And we want to make sure that we can strive to be successful. Thank you for allowing us to speak. And if you have any questions, happy to try and answer those questions.
Questions?
Question.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
You made comment about individuals being dealers. And I guess I always understood that there weren't dealers in social games, that the players themselves were the dealers. Could you clarify?
The option to deal is for the players is always there, yes. There are some people in some clubs, or at least I have seen people in clubs where they had dealers who were volunteers and they were paid with tips.
That's my next question. They did receive tips?
Yes.
And my understanding, Boley has actually made a determination that that would qualify them or classify them, I should say, as an employee.
I agree. But as Brian has explained to you, that they're not using dealers now, and so my understanding is that they would therefore be in compliance with the law. Okay. If I could add just one more thought, and that is I'm a tournament player. Most of the people I see here are tournament players. That is not seven or eight guys sitting around a table playing dealer's choice. You have as many 30, 40, 50 people. In the World Series, they get up to 8,000. You can't do that in a home game unless you've got a very large house and more tables and chairs than most people would manage. So for us, I mean, the standard home game, which is completely legal, is simply not an option.
And I may, Mr. Chair, with regard to that, I think you heard from Brian that it's very clear that you have to play in the game. Now somebody can pass the deal if they don't want to. It's their constitutional right to do that. But those are the rules that the city has said we need to comply with. In part, the Boley rules were around who's an employee, an independent contractor. But this sets that apart in the sense that you solve that by virtue of doing it this way.
And if I could add a point. So I play in these small games, and again, I'm always offered as the opportunity comes around the table, and you're often, you know, you're given the opportunity to deal if you want, you know, and some people do, and some people don't. I would like to say that, in particular, one person that I've played with on more than one occasion, he's a significantly handicapped person in a wheelchair. To get there at all, it takes three of his family members to bring him and get him to the poker table. He's not physically capable of dealing the cards. However, he gets such enjoyment out of coming to this place that his entire family is willing to pitch in and bring him there once a month to play. And he apparently, they think that it contributes significantly to his quality of life.
And he wins a lot of money, too. Sarah Thatcher?
Yeah, I had a question. You were mentioning that they're pretty small tournaments. How big do they get?
Well, the average tournament with the average weekday tournament at Portland Meadows, which is the one I'm most familiar with these days, might have three, four, possibly five tables of nine players, sometimes a little more than that, sometimes a little less, depending on the time of the day or the day of the week. The larger tournaments on Friday and Saturday, you might get over 100 players.
I guess maybe I should have asked what's the size
What's the buy-in?
Yeah, the buy-in on the average weekday tournament runs anywhere from $40 is the average buy-in for both day and evening tournaments. And Brian can correct me if my memory, which is not what it once was, if I've gotten that wrong. And on the larger tournaments, it might go up to 100, sometimes a little bit more than that. And again, let me repeat what has already been said. All of the money that the players put into the game, it comes back to the players.
And I guess I should have. So are they tournaments that talk about winning $100,000 or $50,000 or what? I mean, how does that shake out?
A weekday tournament might have a payout of anywhere for the guarantees tend to run $1,000 to $1,500. They will normally exceed that, and the first place might get $700, $800. In the larger tournaments, it might be as much as $2,500. Now, this as compared to, if you're worried about the real gamblers or the professional poker players, they're all on the World Poker Tour or something like that, paying thousands of dollars to get in, and when they win, winning.
That's where I'll be on Saturday.
And tournaments that have pay out the 2,500 or so have eight or nine tables of players?
Like again, it could be more. There have been total buy-ins sometimes exceed 200 at some of these tournaments.
Okay. Thank you. Dave, other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Rat Ward, Cynthia Thompson, Christopher Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eddie Rhett Ward, and I'm honored to be here today. I'm a 40-plus year resident of the state of Oregon and a 30-plus year successful business person, and I'm here in opposition to the bill. I watched all of the House hearings and observed the lawyers being very careful to write everything down and read exactly what they've said. In respect for your time, I've submitted my comments, and I just want to make a couple of summary observations. One, based on Senator Thatcher's excellent questions about what we're talking about here. Largely, most of what we're talking about is Tournament Texas Hold'em poker. It's not the poker of the 200-year history and the Hollywood stereotypes. In fact, when I approach retirement age, like half the population of Oregon is very soon to do, my wife said, honey, you got to get out of the house. You need some hobbies. And one of them has to be social, because I am a reader of books and a digger in the dirt. I love flowers, and I love reading books. She said, that's not going to cut it. You're going to have to get a social hobby. And I picked poker because I'd played poker all of my life. I didn't even know what Texas Hold'em was. This was at the turn of the millennium. Texas Hold'em didn't even exist until the 1920s. Tournament Texas Hold'em wasn't popularized until the early part of this century, 2003, to be exact, when a young Tennessee accountant paid $35 for an opportunity to win a seat in the World Series of Poker and went on to win $2.5 million. Demonstrating, as many of the people here have said, that on any given day, anybody can win in Tournament Texas Hold'em poker. So it's a global phenomenon today. That's why it's carried on ESPN. That's why so many people are here in support of that. It is such an awesome social game. And social gaming is not going to go away, as everybody has said to you here. It's whether we play it in safe environments that are regulated and governed, or whether it goes into the basements and bars and places that are not as safe and welcoming for everyone. The bill, as it is written right now, seems to assume that it's better to be relegated to nonprofits than for legitimate above-board businesses. I can't find a logical or economic argument to support that other than the benefit that it provides, as several people have testified, to the Washington casinos, who would love to have the Oregonians have to go across the river to play in La Center and elsewhere. California has done a very good job of legislating Texas Hold'em poker and has gained tremendous revenue and employment as a result of that. They have said legally that Texas Hold'em poker passes the preponderance test, which says it's a game of skill, basically, and it's unlike all the other casinos as a result of that. We all play this game because of that, even though we know that it's a game that's completely unique in that on any given day you can do everything wrong and win, and you can do everything right and lose. It frustrates the hell out of those of us who play the game to watch people like Chris Moneymaker, who won the 2003 win. How can that guy do that when he's playing against people who are seasoned players? But that's the nature of the game. And it's one of the reasons why those of us who play it enjoy it so much. It is intensely mentally challenging, far more so than chess, as has already been mentioned. And it is one of the most uniquely social games that I've ever experienced in my 71 years. People that I would never have occasion to bump into, I sit down with and spend hours conversing with, and in the spirit of competition, playing a game that we all love. I can assure you that I'm not a gambler. I don't even play the lottery. I have never thought of my poker as gambling. I think of it in the same way that I think of my golf. When I go play golf, I play a green fee. And when I go play poker, I pay a door fee. It's the same deal. But unlike the green fee that I play pay to play golf, I have a chance of actually getting my green fee back from poker. So I am here asking you to please vote no on this bill as it is currently written. Thank you for your time.
So you're the second one to mention Moneymaker, the first one to mention him by name. So
it is a name, I think, that caused a part of his popularity.
Good afternoon, Chairman Riley and commission and committee members. My name is Cynthia Thompson, and I was raised in Southern Oregon and have lived in Portland for over 25 years. I'm the president of a woman-owned business, small, just me, but some subcontractors once in a while. But I've spent 30 years working in the public transit industry, and usually when I'm in front of committees like yours, I'm asking for money. So it's nice to not be here asking for money. But I am here to voice my strong opposition to this bill, 2190. I would urge you to vote no, and I would also urge you to take action that will make Oregon a leader in this industry. There are so many benefits that are not seen or understood by the average person. And I, you know, maybe I'm idealistic and, you know, would like to solve all the world's problems, but I would love to see this industry brought into the 21st century and to realize the potential social gaming has, and particularly Tournament Texas Hold'em has, for economic development, job creation, tourism. If the policies and regulations were clarified and brought up to date to be in line with what's currently happening in this ever-growing industry, which is truly a phenomenon, I think it could be a really positive thing for the state of Oregon. The changes to RS 167, which are proposed in this bill, don't they really seem to me to be unnecessary and actually just complicate and make things worse, not better. I don't really see any good reason for the bill other than what people have said to help Washington out. I don't think it would solve any of the current issues that and moving social gaming to charitable, fraternal, religious organizations or into the basements or living rooms of everyday citizens just doesn't seem to make sense to me. I hopefully you've read the Attorney General's 2010 opinion regarding the laws that govern social gaming. I think it provides a pretty good history. It was interesting when I read it how it's difficult to read. It's contradictory. It's confusing. I can see why people, you know, are misinterpreting when they read the rules and they go out and try to open a poker room or whatever. They're maybe not all doing it exactly the same because it's very confusing. So I would urge you to take action on two things. First, vote no to the changes outlined in Senate Bill 2190. Delete the language that proposes that it be moved to a nonprofit, charitable, fraternal, religious organization. And secondly, I would love to see you or the governor or somebody appoint a task force and really get this issue resolved. I mean, when I read the Attorney General's opinion, I have to say I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, we need to get this fixed. So I submitted comment to you, and I won't go through it, but I think, you know, if we could actually create legislation that actually was positive and took into account all the myriad of issues and had representation from all the various groups. I listed, you know, I think you've got to have all the stakeholders involved. You need to have the poker room owners, the dealer representatives, casino poker rooms, the players, legislative liaison, city regulators, you know, legal people who know the law, all of those various aspects. But if they would all come together, and urban and rural also, I think you could come up with something that would be very positive and could maybe just put this to rest and be a win-win for everybody who loves the game of tournament poker or poker in general. One other thing I just have to mention because it bugs me, but and that is that social gaming is titled, it's in the ORS statute, is titled Offenses Against General Welfare and Animals. That just is so stupid. I'm sorry, but I would be so nice to get it taken out of there. And also, you know, if you look at the list of all of the different gambling-based games, you have Texas Hold'em is thrown in there with 21, Blackjack, you know, Klondike, Craps Poker, you know, Chuck-a-Luck, Chinese Chuck-a-Luck, whatever. All of those things are basically casino games. Tournament poker is not that. I'm going to tell you a little tiny short story about myself because it – maybe some can relate, and it might. I'm surprised I'm here actually talking about this because my husband is retired. He's disabled. It's all his fault that I'm here. But he started playing poker 10, 15 years ago, and he started playing in casinos. And he played the limit poker in casinos, and he likes to gamble. You know, he plays a few slot machines, things like that. So I went with him. He would play in the limit poker, and that really, in my opinion, is gambling because the house does get everything. So I going along the journey with him, I was skeptical. I saw it as gambling, and I didn't see the point of it all. But as he learned more about poker and began to play it more, and he moved to tournament poker, I could see, you know, he's an avid sports fan, loves sports. This is his sport. I mean, when he's sitting at the table, he is in his wheelchair, but he's at his table. He is equal with everyone else. And it's his brain against someone else's brain. And it is a sport. I never really saw it that way. It's a complex game. So after sitting and watching and waiting, sometimes waiting 8, 10, 12 hours, tournaments can go a very long time, I got bored, so I started playing. So I started playing 5, 6 years ago. And I've played, it's an interesting game. It's complex, it's hard, it's got a lot of challenges. I've played against some very good players, and I think the thing that I learned, one way to realize that it's not just a game of chance, is I don't think you see many slot machine professionals. I don't think you see many of all of these casino-type games where, you know, you have professionals. Actually, in tournament poker, it's a skill, and it's not a game of chance. And I'm amazed by how much stamina, mental focus, understanding of human nature, strategy is required to be successful. And I also, the different people, different people from all walks of life, it's challenging, it's fun. And, you know, Oregon supports the lottery, which, in my opinion, is That's where the person, I don't know if the person who was speaking about people with gambling problems, but if we're really worried about gambling problems, then that's where you need to focus, is in that area or in some of the casinos. But in this particular industry, tournament poker, it's not in the same camp with those types of gambling. So I would just say I'd urge you to vote no, and also to really think about fixing this and making it work so that it's a win-win. Appoint a task force, do something so that we can actually be a leader in the industry. That would be my wish. Thank you.
Hello, Chairman Riley and members of the committee. My name is Christopher Gallagher, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak in opposition to this bill. I'm a small business owner from Portland. I previously leased a space from one of these social clubs. My income was derived in no way from the clubs. I simply leased a space inside of their building. I'm also uniquely qualified to talk about poker in general, as I currently hold 8 gaming licenses in a variety of states across the country. It is how I've derived my living directly in order to buy that business that I owned. I'll save you the trouble. I had a speech here ready, and I can tell that this is obviously drawing on and giving you guys a lot more to consider than what's actually legally pertinent. So I'm going to just touch on the laws, actually. The city of Oregon, or the city of Portland, operates under current city code 147.070. And I have a definition for that if you guys would like to see it. And it covers all the concerns that have been addressed from these out-of-state lobbyists. The fact that Spirit Mountain, Chinook Winds, which are the Seletz tribes and the Grand Ronde tribes, are not here in opposition to this bill. Previously, they were when it came to the bully hearing and things of that nature. They've realized that we are a social club, that there is nothing, that's what we are. We are not a conflict to them. The Ridgefield Washington Casino believes that they somehow have some sort of interest in eliminating these clubs. The people that come and play poker there, if they want to go play craps or roulette, which is what they truly offer that we don't, they'll go and do those things still. There is nothing that keeps somebody from being a patron in their casino. In fact, the Seletz tribe is going to be opening a casino here by 2021 in Salem, and they are not here in opposition to this bill or in support of this bill. They see us as no conflict. In fact, the only reason that we're really here today is the rise in popularity of poker. The majority of these social gaming ordinances have existed for your Moose Lodge or Elks Lodge. My father was a member. My dad was a member. We've played poker in those Elks Lodge and Moose Lodges ever since I was a little kid. It's only because the popularity of Hold'em that has increased. These are truly social clubs. We're just a more modern era of them. Instead of having to apply and become a member based on the old guard, so to speak, and being accepted into a group, we accept everybody. And it's not a door fee. It's a daily membership fee because these are truly social clubs. They operate games that are federally recognized as games of skill. They have to offer, and under Portland's ordinance, which is the only one that I've held a gaming license for, they have to offer up to 3 games. This includes games such as billiards, Big Buck Hunter, and video games like that, which federally allow gambling because they're considered skill-based games. They have entry fees for tournaments that are covered in multiple states. The company that I started my social gaming license for here operates federally in 11 different states, and none of them require social gaming with the exception of Oregon to operate because it is player versus player. And the definition that makes poker actually a casino game is the fact that the rate gets taken. It's very much like sports betting. They put money on opposite sides of the line for sports betting, and they take the 10% vig. The money that they take off the table makes it a casino game. When you go and play gin rummy against your brother on the weekend, that is not a casino game. It is not federally, and that was ruled by a judge in New York, a federal judge, Jim Winkler, I believe, was the judge that made the ruling. As of 2012, he deemed that poker was a game of skill, not a game of chance or luck. He gave the government an opportunity to prove that it was a game of chance, and it was not they could not meet the burden of proof. In addition, several people here today have said that the clubs and the games will be forced underground. I would like to offer up some reasoning as to why that would be. Under my social gaming license, I actually operated several charitable tournaments. If these social licenses are only issued to charitable tournaments, they can only give 50% of the money back to players. So if you came in to play this tournament, as was explained, you know, it's a $40 tournament, 20 of your money would have to directly go to a charity every single time you came to play, and the other 20 would then go back to the players. That business model doesn't work for the charitable organizations. To my understanding, the only supporter of this bill from Oregon is actually the American Legion. And I feel like they've been duped into thinking that they could absorb this business model in lieu of bingo. But just like bingo, where there's a prepaid portion that has to go back, the poker is specified under charitable laws under the state of Oregon that require them to give half of the money back to charity. So the gaming, all these social clubs and everybody that's coming under fire, none of those business models work for the American Legion. They legally could not take the money. That's why it would be forced underground. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I have several other legal arguments that show that this bill is in direct opposition of current federal law. The only person that it actually, or only entity that actually serves, is the Ridgefield and La Center casinos. If it served Oregon Revenue or Oregon casinos, Grand Ron or the Siletz Tribe would be here to support the bill, and they're not.
Good. Do we have any questions?
Yes. You know, we talked about the size of the game, size of the tournaments, and all that. Well, okay, so maybe you can help me with terminology. When I'm seeing something advertised as a $33,000 payout, what does that mean? Does that mean for that week among different players? What does that mean?
Traditionally, what that means is that the club or whoever is promoting a particular event will guarantee that a certain amount of money will make it into the prize pool. So say you came to play the tournament and we had a $2,000 guarantee, but only five people showed up and it was $20. You know, only $100 made it to the prize pool. And me as a business owner, I would put up the other $1,900 for that. And the caveat for that is to get people to come into play to make sure that there's a good turnout for everybody. There's no actual benefit to the clubs. It's not like they're taking money from the prize pool to cover it on days when they're short or anything of that nature.
Okay, so it's not like one person's winning 33.
No,
okay.
Never is that the case. In fact, there's a sliding scale based on the number of people that enter a tournament. Traditionally, first place is going to get somewhere between 10% and 15% of the actual prize pool in most of the local tournaments. So if you had a $1,000 guarantee, you're looking at like $150, you know, to $300 probably for the payout.
And then another question on that. I've had a friend that won some money. It seemed like a ridiculous amount in bingo, which is the boringest game ever. But anyway, did I say that out loud? Sorry. Anyway, they got a little slip 1099 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you do for people who win? Or not you do, but I mean, have you gotten those for when you win?
The way that works is if you have somebody who wins that much at your club, you have to give them the form so that they can fill it out. But legally, it's the player's obligation to make sure that the taxes get paid. And the reason for that being is, like somebody like me, I travel a lot. If I go and I travel to Florida or Oklahoma or Mississippi, which are all places that I go because I have gaming licenses there, if I lose money there but I win money here, at the end of the year when I file my taxes, I'm able to balance it out. That's the purpose for the 1099.
I see.
The only reason they give you the form is so that way we don't duck taxes. And if there is legislation that's needed on a city level or on a state level, we're willing to address that. This is not it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait,
one more.
So what do you think we need to do?
I think that we need to put it back in the city's hands. The state's being asked to overstep bounds that they haven't overstepped in over 40 years. And you're being asked to do it from out-of-state interest. You're not even being asked from anyone in your own constituents to overstep bounds that you guys have not chosen to overstep.
I'll beg to differ because I hear from a lot of different people.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to figure out, based on what the House did, they came to a conclusion that this was prescribed as gambling as under our definitions. So what we're looking at is what is it that we need to do to make certain it is social? Because what their perspective was, from what I took, was that by going nonprofit, they thought they could take the interest out of it for profit. So I'm just trying to figure out what is it that you think we can do to ensure that the clubs stay in place, but they meet the definitions that we have as a state law to make certain it's not gambling.
From the charitable standpoint, you would have to rewrite the current charitable statutes for how the money gets divvied up. As far as a regulatory goes, there's Ann Holmes and her committee are more than capable of stepping over. If certain percentage of the money needs to go back to charity or whatever, that's fine. That just needs to be discussed and laid out. As far as the oversight committee goes, Ann Holmes is more than capable of taking that up.
But if you vote no on this bill, then it stays the way it is. It still has issues, I mean, that need to be resolved, I think. That's why I think it needs to be.
That's what we're trying to figure out. What is it that we can do to resolve it? Understand your suggestion of having a task force or some other means of doing that. But
well,
I'm sitting here on a committee right now. I'm trying to get input to see what is it that we can do to maybe fix the bill so it goes forward and you still have the opportunity to have social gaming.
Well, and if I may, Senator Brzezinski, the Oregon state definition of gambling in regards to the poker is in direct contrast to the federal definition of gambling when it comes to poker. Our definition of poker actually doesn't even entail all the games that are involved within poker. Our definition is fairly antiquated. So without actually changing it, I think we just need to more clearly define the game of poker itself. Because based under federal law, it was Eastern New York Division, they made a ruling that poker was a game of skill, which alleviates it from being a game of gambling. Much like if you played any other game for skill, billiards, darts, they put it in that same category. And even when they made the ruling, they said that it was in stark contrast to many city and federal standards already. But it's literally just the evolution. The state definition needs to catch up.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Eric Schultz, Angela Schultz, and John Bruckmeyer. Yeah, go ahead. Apparently, okay. They're outside or something. We'll.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Riley, committee staff. My name is John Bachmeyer, and I'm here to speak in support of HB 2190. I'm here today on behalf of my clients, the Cardooms and LaCenter Washington. In May of 2013, I testified on HB 3518 before the House Rules Committee. HB 3518 was another bill which was designed to return social gaming back to a truly social and legal environment. During my testimony, I spoke to the multitude of problems the social gaming industry was creating in Oregon. 4 years later, my predictions have obviously come true. The social gaming industry continues to grow and operate illegally. This is not an unfounded claim from an out-of-state competitor. This assertion has been confirmed numerous times by a host of regulatory agencies within the state of Oregon. In 2011, the Oregon Department of Justice issued a legal opinion on social gaming. The conclusion of that opinion states, and I quote, private businesses may not derive any income from the game, including charging cover or extracting any money directly from participants. In 2015, the Oregon Department of Labor and Industries ruled that volunteer dealers were in fact employees. Numerous dealers have filed complaints, and Boley ruled in their favor. Those employees were paid off with cash settlements by the social card rooms. Finally, in 2016, the City of Portland sent a letter to all social gaming licensees clearly stating the compliance requirements for all card rooms based on the recent Boley rulings. Many of the social gaming clubs completely ignored that directive. The City of Portland then concluded an undercover investigation of three different social gaming clubs. They sent in undercover agents 9 different times, and every single time, the social gaming card rooms were found to be in violation. The list of violations includes tipping, door fees, and illegal gaming. The current state of social gaming poker in Oregon is as follows. It is an all-cash business with no internal controls in place. There are no accounting requirements, no auditing requirements, and no regulatory agency dedicated to enforcement. Dealer tips are divided up in the back room with only management present and quietly dispersed the following day. The games are not conducted in a fair and balanced manner. The house commonly inserts skilled players into active games and provides a bankroll for them to play with.
So I'm going to ask you, please hold your editorial comments.
All of these factors seriously diminish the integrity of the game. This is a critical concern for my clients who have worked for 30 years to run a legal and professional gaming business where the quality and honesty of the game is not in question. The opponents of 2190 have been very vocal with their pushback, and in closing, I'd like to address a few of their claims. 2190 does not eliminate jobs. Instead, it protects workers' rights by terminating the absurd charade of the volunteer dealers and ensuring that employees are protected and receiving appropriate benefits. 2190 does not force poker to underground venues like the opponents would suggest. Poker will still be available for everyone to play. It will simply be relocated to a state-licensed nonprofit location where licensed gaming is already conducted. The poker industry will finally be regulated by an experienced state agency that has been policing gaming for many years, and that would be the Oregon Department of Justice. In closing, my clients are not trying to eliminate the competition. Our poker room has a total of 5 tables. 5. We have 30 total tables. 5 of them are for poker. During a recent poker tournament, a winner at our club took home $435. Portland Meadows Poker Room has 22 tables and just concluded a poker tournament the first weekend in March with the guaranteed $50,000 cash prize pool. What my clients are fighting for is to protect the industry's integrity. With 3 decades of work they put into doing so, they realize the opportunity and the importance of keeping gaming on the square and filled with integrity in the Pacific Northwest. And I wanted to show you a couple things real quickly. There's been some discussion about the prize pools. I brought a couple exhibits which are included in my testimony, and these exhibits are all found on the social media pages of these clubs. Here's a $200,000 tournament. Here's a $50,000 tournament. Here's some folks just enjoying some social gaming with stacks of $100 bills. Here's another $100,000 tournament. And here's some more social gaming with stacks of $100 bills. And the last thing I'd like to say is, I too have worked in gaming for 26 years. I've gamed all over the world. I've represented clients all over the country. There is not a model like this anywhere in the country. Nowhere. Every poker room survives off a rake. That's how you pay employees. That's how you have real surveillance. That's how you have marketing and all the above. I'm in complete agreement with the wonder and beauty of poker. Some of my best friends come from it too. But you can't operate thousands of dollars in cash with no oversight and expect there not to be problems. I'm happy to answer any questions you would like. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Tom Rask, Jack Elder, and Kelly. And I'm going to guess Horton. Hinton. So I wasn't too far off.
Good afternoon, Chairman Riley, Vice Chairman DeBoer, members of the committee. My name is Tom Rask. I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify today. I'm here in support of House Bill 2190. For the past 5 years, I've been involved in studying, making an effort to attempt to manage this problem. And I've concluded, in my capacity as a representative, as an attorney here in Portland, in this region representing the card rooms in La Center, that everything that occurs is completely illegal. Everything. Now, what I'd like to do today is give you a quick summary. I think it's important to understand what was the legislative history behind the bill, how did, then turn to how we've gotten here, and then talk to you about what I think House Bill 2190, what we intend it to do, and why the House, in a bipartisan manner, supported the bill and passed it here to the Senate. So what is the background? The social gaming exception to unlawful gaming. Unlawful gambling in this state is a Class C felony. Class C felony. Not a misdemeanor, a Class C felony. The exception was created in 1971 when the legislature undertook an entire rewrite of the criminal code. At that time, they adopted social gaming from the state of Michigan. If you look at legislative history, it's kind of interesting. Social gaming in Michigan were 5 guys sitting in an elk lodge playing poker. That was the intent of the bill, and the legislative history is clear that the concept was that we wanted to be able to let people, players in a game, in their home, play poker with their friends. That was the idea. That's what the bill originally did in 1971. If you look at the legislative history, and I'll note it for the record, I attached to my testimony, which I submit to you, 3 things that I'll refer to in my testimony. One is the Attorney General's opinion that was referenced earlier. Two, I attached the Boley decision regarding the illegal employee situation, which we'll talk about. And third, I attached an interesting news story from Ashland, which in which the state, the Department of Justice, dealt with a social gaming problem in Ashland when a nonprofit was running it. And they had statutory authority. You don't need any additional authority to deal with the problem. So I put those in the record for you today. So in 71, that's what passed the House Senate, becomes law. 73, business owners come to the legislature along with certain other interests and say, gee, we'd like to be able to do social gaming in businesses, and we'd like you to allow the House to make 25% profit. Okay? 1973 legislature passes that bill, amends social gaming from what was the original concept of people sitting around playing in their house or in the back of an Elks Lodge to allow up to 25% operating profit. 1974, there's a special session. You all know what special sessions are like. They're preset. They come with a plan. The special session called 74 had nothing to do with social gaming. Between 1973 and 1974, in 11 months, illegal gaming exploded in Oregon. It exploded because there was the profit motive. The statute authorized 25% overhead profit. And suddenly, we had mass illegal gambling. It was so out of control, the special session addressed it. Now, you all know what it takes to amend, to pass a bill in special session. That's how bad it was in 11 months. They realized, the legislature said, whoa, allowing profit motive into social gaming doesn't work. And so they went categorically the other way. And in 74, in the special session, a bipartisan bill passed out and was signed into law that is the current social gaming law today. And that law very clearly, the legislature, having learned its lesson from allowing the profit motive to be involved in social gaming, it went entirely the other way and said, wait a minute. If you turn to ORS 167.117, subsection 21, it defines social game. And what the legislature said was, we will not allow house banking, house income, or any house income, I'm sorry, house odds, or any house income from the operation of the game. They went totally the other way. They said, whoa, we're not going to allow any profit whatsoever. The Attorney General's opinion that I attached to my testimony today actually goes through at great length both the historical summary of the law and does an analysis point by point of the statute. At the request of the lottery, the AG went through and did a point by point. What does it mean to be a player? What does it mean to be the house? If you read that opinion, the conclusion is clear. No house income means no direct or indirect income. The Attorney General says you can't raise the price of a beverage during the poker play, let alone what you normally do. You can't benefit whatsoever. Now, that is the law. So what's happened? How did we end up where we are today? You've heard a lot of people testify about the interest in the explosion of poker. That's undisputed. Starting around 2007, 2008, 2009, ESPN started calling poker a sport, putting the World Series of Poker on TV. I mean, poker exploded. And so innovative people with cities and counties who couldn't manage this, frankly, don't have the resources to do it. People went to, like, the city of Portland and for $500 got a social gaming license. All the city required was a two-paragraph business plan. No management, no regulation of the cash, no control. Nothing. Now, that's when I got involved. My client said, gee, we heard about this poker in Portland. We don't understand. In fact, LeCenter was interested in coming to explore whether this is a legitimate business to open in Oregon. We did an investigation and we said, wait a minute, every single thing here is illegal. Social gaming says you cannot earn any income. How do you charge a door fee when you can't earn any income? How do you tip an employee? You can't, because it goes back to what the original motive of the statute was. The motive of the statute was five guys sitting around playing in their house. It was never intended to be gambling. The citizens of Oregon have voted numerous times, as all of you know, strongly against gambling. The citizens have spoken. If we wanted to have legal gambling, listen, we'd be happy to open a card room in Portland or anywhere in the state. My clients, if that was legal, we would be doing it. So, what did we observe? What happened with this explosion was cities and counties had no money to manage it, had no rules in place, didn't know what to do, didn't have the resources. So what's transpired? Our investigation revealed illegal profit from the centers being charged with the illegal door fees. Clearly that's income. Cover charges, illegal tipping of dealers who were allegedly volunteers, and as earlier testimony mentioned, were concluded to be not employees. I'm not volunteers, but employees.
So I'm going to stop you for a second. We have to get out of the room very quickly. If you could summarize and move on to someone else. So we got a couple more people.
Sure.
And I want to be able to hear everyone.
I appreciate that, Senator, and I will do that for you. The point is, what does House Bill 2190 do? It does not void social gaming. If this bill was, as the opponents would have you believe, is going to stop social gaming, it would say strike Section 21 from the statute. It does not do that. What we've concluded and what other agencies have concluded is that you must take the profit motive out of the gaming. The cities and counties don't have the resources to manage this. So when people charge a door fee or do anything that's illegal, which there's lots of evidence they do, there's no way to control it. By sending it to charities, they have a lot at stake, right? Charities have 501c3 tax status at stake. They're going to follow the rules. They're going to pay people that should be paid employee status. They're going to manage things in an appropriate way, just like they do in bingo. People would have you believe that there won't be poker in Oregon if it's run by charities. As many of you know, bingo is currently operated by charities in the state of Oregon. That it's the same kind of model. You would have bingo in bingo parlors, charities take one day a week, and the bingo parlors operate. I can envision a poker parlor where charities take one day a week, and they run it. And that's a way to allow responsible social gaming. And this bill does that. We appreciate your time, and I'm here to answer any questions.
My name is Kelly Hinton, and I'm a former 5th District Commander of the American Legion in Washington State. Now, I'm not Special Forces. I did do a stretch in recon and in cavalry and infantry. I spent 14 years in uniform. So the side of right in this matter is not determined by our veteran status. I'll just cut to the chase. The reality is that if this bill is passed, I think about what the American Legion and the VFW and the Red Cross, for example, if they were to become involved in this, could do for their various constituencies, particularly the veterans like those that are unfortunately more or less permanent residents in VA hospitals. This presents an outstanding opportunity as a fundraising proposal for these organizations. And when I make these remarks, I make them only for myself. I am not representing the American Legion as a part of this. But I speak for the American Legion to the extent that we can always use more funds for more things to forward Americanism and to help our veterans out when they need help and we don't have the money to assist them. The rest of it's been said, and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Riley, members of the committee and staff. My name is Jack Elder. I'm president of Oregon Sports Action, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to the development of Olympic sport in Oregon. We have offices in Beaverton. I'm speaking in favor of House Bill 2190. Oregon Sports Action has held a bingo license issued by the state of Oregon for 27 years. In that time period, we've made and donated almost $2 million to a variety of Oregon sports associations. We currently host 15 sport nonprofits, our offices in Beaverton, including the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame and Museum, and without bingo and charitable gaming, none of this would have been possible. Which brings us to HB 2190. The proposal to add Texas Hold'em to charitable gaming is a very rational and welcome effort to help nonprofits and fundraising and to rein in what I consider to be a current unsustainable, if not outright illegal, operating model of Texas Hold'em gaming held in de facto card rooms. Our experience in bingo is based on the cooperative arrangement of bingo licensees and oversight from the Charitable Gaming Division of the Oregon Department of Justice. We operate under clear, bright lines established by the department, which include inventory control, daily quarterly reporting, annual renewal of license, expense control, requirements of donations to our dedicated purposes, in addition to maintaining our status as a nonprofit serving the community. Our books are open to the public. I believe that we would see a public benefit if Texas Hold'em was added as a charitable fundraising activity in addition to bingo. When we first started playing bingo, there were over 100 Class A licenses in the state of Oregon. We're now down to 15. The reduction in licenses is directly related to the expansion of the state of Oregon lottery business and tribal gaming. We believe that bingo will continue with this much-reduced footprint well into the future. We also believe and encourage this committee and the legislature to do with Texas Hold'em what had been done with bingo in the late 1980s when the Charitable Activities Division was created in the Oregon Department of Justice and questionable operations and practices were eliminated. Passage of HB 2190 may well pave the way to a long-term support of community activities with new avenues of fundraising through Charitable Texas Hold'em. Now, I'll tell you, as an individual who operates a bingo game and has been at it for 27-plus years, that the first thing we recognize when we're operating and managing a $2 million handle per annum, we've got $2 million passing through our hands called a handle. Out of that, 70 to 75% of it goes back in prizes immediately that night. 10 to 15% goes out in expenses. The rest is our net, net, net. We take that and we give it away. It's not easy. You have to pay attention. But you have to also recognize that without oversight, somebody will try to get between you and the revenue stream. Everybody who works in a building that has cash flow is trying to figure out how to get a piece of the action without earning it. And that's a fact. That's why there's so many controlling agencies in gambling. Now I'll answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I understand there may be a couple of people here who have not testified. They came a long way and want to testify. If that's true, would they come up? Yeah, please. Keep it short, but thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, by way of introduction, my name is John Gutcher and my wife Carla. We came from Ontario, Oregon, mm-hmm. where we own a small business there, the Ontario Poker Room. And I won't reiterate what the other opponents said. We are strongly against this bill, but I can kind of shed some light on what the previous people who are in would like it to pass. In a little less than a year, we've built a 400-member customer base. And about 200 of those are from Idaho, where poker is illegal. And they're not going to the charities to play poker. And that's the only people that technically in Idaho can play. We've sunk everything we have into this small business. If it does pass, it's going to be a tremendous blow to us. So with that, I strongly hope that you oppose this bill.
Thank you.
I'm Carla Gutcher. I'm a co-owner of the Ontario Poker Room from Ontario, Oregon. If this were to pass, we are in a vortex where we are in Oregon, Ontario, Oregon. It's 3.5 hours to jackpot, 3-4 hours to wild horse. And there is a ton of illegal games going on in our area. And we, when we first did our analysis of opening up a business there, we underestimated the power of the illegal games going on there. We pull, like he said, we were open less than a year, and we have over 400 to 500 people in our database. And we're pulling from the Treasure Valley, Ontario, Idaho area. And there's tons of people coming because we are legal. and we thought we pay the taxes, we pay all the fees, we're within the rights of the state of Oregon, and they would rather come to a legal establishment such as ours. And if you were to shut us down, those illegal games are going to just explode. As we've been open, we've shut down 3 illegal games in our area in just less than a year, because they're coming to play in a legal establishment. And it's safe, and it's clean, and it's not a bar, and that's what we have done in our area. Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm John Swank. Lived in Beaverton for 38 years. Retired 6 years ago, and only 3 years ago even knew about the social gaming plus places. But love to play poker. Played at the game the last 3 years. Last year I went about once a week. But I go in there, I know at least half the people in there more. They greet me. The dealer, a person at the door, says, "Hi, John. You know, it's really a good social place. Play lots of golf too, but this last winter was so bad that if I didn't have the game to go to, I would have gone stir crazy in Portland. I really would have." You meet people from 20 to 80, doctors, teachers, plumbers, all types. You talk and meet with people you would never normally associate with, really, and it's really great. And I don't, you know, if they close this place, a lot of people will be unemployed. If they find a job right away, fine. If not, they're going to go on unemployment. State's going to have to pay for that. There'll probably be some single people with a couple kids. Maybe they'll be on welfare. Then you got to pay for that. And people don't realize what a good deal it is to pay a $10 door fee and be there 5 or 10 hours. You're paying $2, $1 an hour. They got 6 big TV screens of sports games you can watch while you're playing cards. If they close this down, a lot of people go to casinos, which they take about $5 per hand out of the pot. And so if I'm there most of the day, I win 20 hands, that's $100 that goes to the casino out of my pocket, where I could play a social game with people I know, and I'm paying $10 for all day.
So I'm going to stop you because we have to be out of here in 2 minutes.
And last thing is, you don't want people going up to Washington and taking Oregon money up there. Let's keep it in the Oregon economy down here.
Thank you.
Okay. We do have packets for the committee, too, to read.
Great. Yeah, just give them to the... All right. Thank you. All right. I'm going to close this public hearing. And I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you all very much for. And I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you all.